6:04 in the Fast Lane. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. With Brad Barnes and Brad Thompson and Chris Ranji, I'm Randy Carricker. Great to have you with us as we bring you, with all due respect, you can send in your text to the Hot Shots text line, 65780. We would love to hear from you. Before we get to "with all due respect," though, dreams came true on a Georgia highway this week. Local police called the forecast cloudy with a chance of cash after an armored truck's back doors flew open on Interstate 285. Upwards of $175,000 in cash flew out and onto the roadway, causing hundreds of people to stop and get as much as they could. But they could face a penalty. Under Georgia law, retrieving money from the highway constitutes theft of mislaid property, which makes it a misdemeanor to keep lost items without first taking reasonable measures to restore the property to the owner. Keeping more than $1,500 could even lead to a felony charge. As of last night, five Good Samaritans had already returned nearly $4,500 to police.
How much do you think they kept?
Probably $45,000.
You think so? That is a good way because, look, with all the technology we have now, we've seen video of cars and people stopping in the streets. Everybody's got your plate numbers. They'll find you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you, they don't know how much money you picked
right
up. You give back some of it. It's like, yeah, I did pick up $30.
Here you go.
This is for you. And then all of a sudden you're balling out of control.
unless they watch the video and count every single dollar you pick up.
They could do that.
Maybe.
Todd Gurley of the Los Angeles Rams watched NBA free agency over the last couple of weeks, and he's upset that the average NBA player makes a lot more than superstar NFL players. With all due respect, you should have picked a different sport.
Yeah.
Not one where you have 53 guys on the roster.
Well, that's a good call, but overall, I think he still made a good decision. It's worked out well.
Yeah, he's doing okay.
Yeah, I think it's worked out very, very well for him. All right, so you guys know Shaquille O'Neal's rich, right?
Yeah.
You guys were aware of that. Well, apparently he started investing just like Jeff Bezos, and he quadrupled what he is worth. Apparently he heard Jeff Bezos one time say that he makes his investments based on if it's going to change people's lives, like things that just really believe mean something. With all due respect, I'm going to have to start following Shaq for financial advice. I just want to follow Shaq now. If he follows Bezos, which, by the way, he lost half of his stuff. Not the best investment ever in a divorce.
Yeah, not great.
But he's still a billionaire. Shaq is my new financial advisor.
Well, I do believe Shaq is right. Kazam changed my life.
Kazam was good. And Shaq Diesel, his first album, was fantastic. He owns a ton of stuff. He was an early investor in Google. He's got investments in Apple.
Five
he owns
guys.
24 Hour Fitness, 17 Aunt Annie's Pretzels,
nice.
Krispy Kreme, a big chicken restaurant in Las Vegas, nightclubs. He owns Five Guys, too?
I think he's got, he owns some franchises.
Wow.
That's good for him.
Doesn't he?
Changing people's lives.
KMOV from Dixon, Illinois, this story. An Illinois mother arrested after allegedly driving around with her daughters inside a pool on top of her car. That's right. Jennifer Yeager was stopped while driving a white Audi on Route 2 just west of Palmyra. I guess that's how you pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
With a blue inflatable pool on top. Authorities said two of Yeager's daughters were inside the pool to hold it down as she drove home from a friend's house. She told police she took the pool to get inflated. She was charged with two counts of endangering the health or life of a child, two counts of reckless conduct. With all due respect to Jennifer Yeager, at least fill the pool with water.
Yeah. Come on.
Give the kids something to play with on top of the roof.
Just
of the
hanging
car.
Out in a pool? How boring is that?
People are stupid.
Fun.
Yeah. Jennifer
Reckless.
Yeager. Not smart.
Got all Yeagered up before she did that. Chances are.
Yeah.
Big Sis, what do you got for us?
With all due respect to all of the other decades, the 2000s gave us the most goats in sports. LeBron, Phelps, Tom Brady,
Jim Brewer.
He was funny yesterday.
He's good.
It's a lot of goats.
He's really good.
It is. 80s were pretty good, though. You had the Lakers with Magic and Kareem, and you had Larry Bird, and you had Gretzky, and you had Lemieux, and you had Montana, and you had Rice, and Barry Sanders. I guess he was 90s more, but you know what I'm saying.
Oh, I hear you.
Walter Payton.
Yep.
With all due respect, Steven Jackson's career was wasted in St. Louis.
Yeah.
He could have. I mean, he was great anyhow. His career was amazing, especially everyone knew what the Rams were going to do every play. They were going to run, they would stack the box, and he was still able to get his. But you put him somewhere where they actually had, I don't know, an offense and an idea, his numbers would be off the charts.
Yep. They didn't have an offense or an idea or a clue how to develop an idea or an offense.
Which is a problem.
With all due respect, if you honk your horn a second after the light turns green, you should not have a license.
Disagree.
Disagree. If you're still sitting there a second after the light turns green, you deserve to be honked at.
Yeah,
I don't begrudge anybody honking. I don't necessarily honk, but I don't
begrudge
anybody.
A couple of courtesy seconds at least. Now, if you're in New York,
you get 2.5 seconds tops
for me. If you're in New York, you're getting honked at as soon. Yep. You're actually getting honked at before it turns green because the guy behind you knows it's going to turn green soon.
If I'm in the front and I get honked at because I'm looking at my phone or whatever, I totally I put my hands up and I go, yep, you got me. You're right. I should have been paying attention. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
You ever honk at somebody when they're not paying attention in front of you, even when the light's red, to see what they'll do?
No, I do not do that.
Me neither, but I was just thinking. People freak out a little bit. Don't do that to somebody. It's not cool.
Hey, with all due respect to IMDb, how are you going to give Kazam 2.9 stars?
Got to be better than that.
Was it out of 3 back then?
No, out of 10.
Oh.
It's got to be at least a 9. Terrible.
Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
And thanks for your text to the Hot Shots text line, 65780. Next up, our buddy Reed Lowe spent 4 seasons with the Blues in the 2000s, but at least he got lucky by being here for the good ones. Losey is next on 101 ESPN. We're efforting our friend Reed Lowe. You hear that fight with Ty Domi there. By all accounts, when you talk to people that were fighters in the NHL in the era in which Ty Domi played, he had the hardest head of anybody. It would hurt your hand to punch Ty Domi in the head.
That is not a fun living. That these guys did, that what Reed Lowe did, what Ty Domi did. The fact that they're talking about it there, setting up your fight for the night. Mm-hmm. Like you go into it, you guys watched that Ice Guardians, right?
Yeah.
The film, and I believe that was Chaser,
executive producer.
One of the guys behind that. Yeah, it was awesome. But it like made you sick to your stomach, like realizing that was it. That was your gig, that was your job. That's tough living right there.
Reed Lowe is with us now on 101 ESPN on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line with BT and Ronge. This is Randy Losey. How are you doing today?
Good, fellas. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Thanks for taking some time with us. I want to start with this because we heard a highlight of you and Ty Domi, and I mentioned to the guys that pretty much to a man, people say that I've talked to, that Ty Domi had the hardest head to punch. Is that true?
Yeah, my second fight against him in Toronto, that was actually the night that we came back from a 5-1 or 5-0 deficit with about 15 minutes left in the third period. I fought him at the end of the second period. And after I got his helmet off, I was kind of trying to figure out if there was a way for me to pick it up off the ice and put it back on his head, because I'd rather punch his helmet than his head.
Losey, what was the feedback from anybody that ever had a chance to fight against you? Like, what was your MO?
Well, Chris Neal, who was, a super middle, probably middleweight, but fought all the heavyweights and was a good hockey player and had a couple 15 goal seasons. You know, he told Patrick Lalime once that Patrick Lalime said, like, what do you think about, some of the guys in the league? Like, who kind of makes you wonder? And he said that Reed Lowe was the guy that made him wonder, because he never took a lot of penalties and he wasn't an idiot on the ice. But every once in a while, the screws would come in loose, and I guess he was referring to my 250-plus penalty minute games where I started some line brawls and got crazy. But I was a right-handed thrower my whole life, and I trained when I was in junior hockey to throw left hands. And so there was a lot of guys that actually thought I was a southpaw, but I wasn't. I'm a natural righty. So just a guy that I didn't knock guys out, but I was a big, strong, tough guy that wanted to grapple, tire you out, and then finish you off at the end.
I'm always interested in hockey fights that start with conversations, because that it apparently does happen on the ice where two guys just kind of talk about it before it happens and then they do it. What was the best conversation you had leading up to a fight?
Probably the PJ Stock fight in Boston back in, I think it was 2003. We were both on the ice. It was a 2-2 hockey game. We were both on the ice with about 15 minutes left on the scoreboard. And I looked at PJ and I, you know, pound for pound, he might be the toughest guy to ever play hockey. Just, you know, 5'10", 5'9", maybe. I'm giving him a little bit of credit there. But just a lefty that just would go toe-to-toe with anybody. And I looked at him and said, hey, you know, we're not going to get any more shifts tonight. Want to put a show on for the crowd? He's like, sure, let's get after it. So we had a nice little punch in the face contest, and it's actually one of the most hit videos on YouTube for hockey fights. So it's a good one to watch if anybody hasn't seen it.
Reed Lowe, who played for 4 years for the Blues in the 2000s, joining us in the Fast Lane on this Flashback Week 2019. Lozy, along those lines, in that era, when you played a team, did you have a pretty good idea, even before a game, as to whether or not you were going to fight that night?
You know, it was a little bit different back then because the game was on its way to changing where, as an enforcer, you couldn't be a liability on the ice. And the goon of the game was kind of on its way out, and I was always working on my game, working on my skating, and making sure that I had the ability to get on the ice and be a regular in the NHL and not get healthy scratched every time we got into a situation against Detroit where maybe they didn't have any tough guys. So the game was on its way to change. And then obviously in 04-05 after the lockout, the game really changed with the interference penalties and stuff like that and limited that forcer role even more, as well as the instigator role. But I think that for me, it was, you know, I was never a fighter. Like, I've not been in street fights and hockey fights, but protecting my teammates is what kind of drove me. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that did the fighting and the enforcer role that feel that way, that were there to protect. If your teammates were a couple inches taller and 20 pounds heavier because you had their back, they were going to be more comfortable doing what made them best, which was being a hockey player and scoring the goals and doing the things that we needed to do to win hockey games. So it's an opportunity for us as guys that probably would have never made the NHL because we didn't have the skill level, but because of our physicality and our fisticuffs, had an opportunity to have a career in the NHL. So that's kind of the cool part about what we don't see today.
When you started in the NHL, and obviously the Blues knew who you were, but was there a Blues player that you had to fight in practice so that you could prove yourself?
Well, I fought several times, not really in practice, but in training camp.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You know, there was, you know, my first training camp in 97, you know, I fought Jamal Mayers. I fought, you know, I think I played 5 training camp games and had 7 fights. So I was fighting everybody under the sun. And then my second year training camp, I fought Chaser and then fought Twister that same camp. That didn't go very well. but, you know, after that, fighting in training camp, kind of, again, the game was starting to change, and that, you know, the coaches didn't want to see all the fights in training camp. They wanted to see if guys could play because, you know, they knew you could fight already if you'd been through the junior ranks, the minor pro ranks, and now you had a chance to make an NHL team. They didn't want to see if you could fight. They knew you could fight. If you were good enough to make, you know, bring it through training camp to get some exhibition games, was an opportunity for you to get out there and fight the other people. They didn't really want guys fighting in training camp anymore. So that kind of went away after that.
Reed, you alluded to it a little bit ago, talking about the guy that, you know, said he's got his screws loose a little bit. And you talked about your 50-plus penalty-minute games and had a couple of them, I believe. Which one is your what is your favorite story about that? How did that go down? I know you've told it before, but I'd love it.
The game in Calgary, Bob Boutner kind of cheap-shotted Dougie Waite. And actually tore his pelvis, bone right off the muscle, and he was out home the rest of the year. And played in the playoffs, but probably shouldn't have because it was a fairly severe injury. So I went out there and with Jamal Mayers, Bryce Salvador, Alex Havanoff, Tyson Nash, and they had Rob McGeer, Clark Willem, Bob Boutner. Actually, Chief was on the ice too. I fought him in the first period of that game. And then I had 2 fights in that shift and multiple game misconducts, instigator penalty, both the 10-minute misconduct and the 2-minute minor, and just started a brawl. Skated into the corner, dropped my gloves, grabbed Bobby, and just started beating him into the ice. And then the scrum happened, and then I come up from the scrum, and Rob McGeer was beaking me, so I punched him in the face, and we started fighting. And next thing you know, I'm in the dressing room. And one thing about line brawls and things like that, where you when you're in junior, it's such a team-building moment. I know that there's people out there that are rolling their eyes at me right now, but, you know, you're out there, there's five guys fighting, five other guys on the other team, and everybody gets kicked out of the game, and you're in the dressing room, and maybe one guy's got a bloody nose or a cut in his eye or a black eye, but you're high-fiving, you're like, oh, God, did you see me do this? Did you see me do that? And, you know, it was something that I look back on as a great memory kind of growing up. Even guys that never would fight, you know, they get caught out in a line brawl in junior hockey, and that's what it was about. It was about sticking up for each other and being a team, and that was one of the coolest things that we ever did.
Speaking of fighting, and you were talking a moment ago about fighting against teammates, we all know earlier in this past season, famously, the Zach Sanford and Robert Bortuzzo fight that took place in practice, and it didn't, you know, it looked like they were not happy with each other. And then you cut to several months later, and here they are on the ice after the Stanley Cup win, and they're hugging. And putting those two images back to back, it's kind of it's interesting, and it's striking to see those two guys do that. Can a moment like that, or maybe more specifically that moment, how much do you think that had to do with helping team cohesiveness, if at all?
It's not premeditated. You know, even the fights where I know that I'm going to go out there and get in a fight, I don't really feel like it has a level of premeditation that comes along with that. And I think when you take just a specific look at that fight back in November or whenever it was just two guys that were pissed off at the way they were playing and probably chewed by the coach, or something crazy happened, they came together and they got in a fight. And, you know, there's a kind of a saying that goes along with hockey, you know, whether you're on with your teammates or you're in a game playing against a friend of yours that you from back home, or a guy you played with on another team, you know, kind of what happens on the ice stays on the ice. And, you know, that fight and what happened with those guys, it's not high school. They're not mad at each other for the next 2 months because they got in a fight in the ice. It's, hey, you know what? We smacked each other around a bit, and let's go have a beer after type of a mentality. And actually, the night, the night after I got in that PJ Stock fight, we were at the same bar after the game drinking beers, taking pictures with people. Both had shiners, and it was just part of what we did, right? And that's no different than those guys. You know, that probably, if anything, brought those two guys together closer, no different than two brothers getting in a fight. So it's not unheard of. It's not crazy. It's not something as a hockey player that we look at and go, oh, I can't believe you did that. Not a big deal. Two guys, emotions are high. The team's not doing well. They smack each other around in practice, and they go and have a beer after, and it probably enhances their relationship as friends along the way.
Lozy, for people that aren't aware of it, the lockout in 2004-05 canceled the season and ended a lot of guys' careers and essentially brought yours to an end in large part because of those rules changes that you talked about. But taking your job out of it, I know that's hard. Do you like what you see now in the NHL, what those rules changes have brought us?
I guess I'm kind of the backside of this, and the rule changes are good. The game's a better game today. The parity in the NHL is there. I love watching and knowing that the last 2 weeks of the NHL season at the Western Conference is going to be an absolute barn burner, and there's a great chance that team that's, you know, fighting its way into the NHL playoffs is going to be one that's probably going to have a great chance of winning the Stanley Cup, because they almost, if you even take a look at this year, you know, with Tampa and Columbus, it's one of those things that the game's a better game, right? I don't like the cheap stuff. I don't like Marchand and the way that he's allowed to have that extra portion of his game that, for me, doesn't belong in the game. I don't think the game today has the same level of respect player to player that it did when I played, or back in the 80s and the 90s, or even before that, where, you know what, guy did something stupid, he had to answer the bell. And the guys that didn't want to answer the bell didn't do stupid things and didn't live on the protection of the instigator rule or the protection of suspensions or whatever comes along with that. You did something stupid, you had to stand up and you ate your pie and you got back to work. And I think that you know, the game was safer back when I played and in the 90s because of the tough guy rule. And what I mean by that is, you know, sticks would get up, the game's out of hand, 3-4, 5-0, you know, guys are chirping, you know, maybe slashing, doing that kind of thing. The two tough guys would come out, the guy that was on the winning team, or that was the team that was winning, he would be protecting his lead. The other guy would be, hey, I need to spark my teammates. And then typically after there was a good fight, typically after that, they would have a good hockey game. Maybe a couple goals on the other side, and the game would get better. And I don't think that we see that anymore. We see a lot of the cheap stuff. We see a guy like Marchand having the ability to lick another guy on the ice. Like, absolutely embarrassing. And the fact that the NHL allows that to take place, for me, is something I don't like about the game. But I think they've done a lot of good things when the game, when we look at it today, with the scoring and the speed and the amount of good players at a young age that are in our game. So I'm kind of twofold on it.
Reed Lowe, we always enjoy the material that you bring us. Thanks so much, and have a great evening, sir.
Hey, guys, have a good one. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you later. That is our friend Reed Lowe joining us here in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, when the Cardinals take the field against Arizona tomorrow night, they'll have a different look with some changes made in the roster today. That's next on 101 ESPN. The Cardinals made some moves today. They have sent first baseman outfielder Ronel Ravelo back to Memphis, and also sent Tyler Webb down to the minors. Yadier Molina placed on the 10-day DL retroactive to July 8th with his right thumb tendon strain. And replacing those guys, Matt Carpenter returns from his lower back strain. Chasen Shreve is added from Memphis. And Andrew Kisner is also brought up from Memphis. To get Shreve on the 40-man, the Cardinals have placed Jordan Hicks on the 60-day DL. And Mike Schilt told the assembled media at Busch Stadium today that Molina will probably be out about 3 weeks with the thumb injury.
Well, better safe than sorry. You knew something was not just bothering him a little bit, but you knew it had to be bad for Yachty to miss games before the break, and ends up being something that just, you know, 7-8 days isn't going to be able to handle. So this one stinks, but you got to be able to get him right and get him right for the push down the stretch. I hope that after having the back issue, and who knows how much that's been hindering
Matt
Carpenter.
How long do you think he had that?
At least a week back.
It's got to be.
You guys think?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right around there. I hope it allows him to free something up and let it eat. We know Matt Carpenter and track record is what it is. I mean, he's going to get his opportunities to be the guy again. He had a great July last year. He hit 11 home runs in July, drove in 21. But there were also precursors beforehand. So maybe you could see it coming a little bit. This year you haven't had as many of those. But look, the more players you can have healthy and the more guys that can be out there that end up being what their career dorms have been, the better. And Matt Carpenter is going to be a key to the Cardinals' success in the second half.
He has to be part of it, no matter what happens with everybody else in the lineup. And I know that as a winning team, you can't live with just two guys in the lineup producing. But in this particular lineup, there are two guys that have to produce. Matt Carpenter is one of them, and the other is an obvious in Paul Goldschmidt. And they're just, to this point, not doing it. This team does not go anywhere this year unless those two guys are hitting closer to what they normally do. Because look, they're here for a reason, and that is to be both of them a bulk of the offense. We've all expected that. Paul DeJong's going to give you some power. Colton Wong's going to give you what he gives you. I don't think that you really count on much from him. But the two guys in this order that really should be driving things are those two, and they haven't done that at all this year.
Meanwhile, in the bullpen, Tyler Webb has been hit and miss, and lately mostly miss. Shreve maybe figured something out down in Memphis. Since June 1st, he has a 1.72 earned run average in 15 and two-thirds with 21 strikeouts in those 15 and two-thirds and just 3 walks in 15 games. So hopefully he'll be able to recreate some of the success that he's enjoyed at AAA up here at the major league level.
It's a move that makes sense. Like, if you're looking at the bullpen right now and looking at a weak link here recently, I think it has been Webb. And Webb had some good games for you, but you have an opportunity to get somebody that's a hot hand, and that's a nice thing about having some flexibility down in that bullpen. I know that the Cardinals were in the position out of spring training that they had to let Chasen Shreve go, had to take him off the roster. He cleared waivers, and they were able to retain him, and the hope was that's what they wanted. That was like the best-case scenario for the team because they knew if Shreve was right, Shreve was the guy that they – the more sought-after guy in the deal. It was him and Gallegos that sent Luke Voit over to New York. Now they're both up and members of the bullpen, and the bullpen is a strength right now. But it's huge to have two lefties down there that you can trust in situations, and yes, the hope is that he provides that because Miller is looking better and better, man. Andrew Miller is starting to look like the Andrew Miller that the Cardinals had signed and hoped that he would be again. He's throwing the slider for strike. He's throwing it for chase. He's spotting up his heater a little bit better. He looks confident the more and more work that he's gotten. But if you can add Chasen Shreve to that mix, good for you.
I'm not too worried about the Cardinals' bullpen moving forward rest of the year. I think they're, no matter what happens, I think they're okay there. And that doesn't mean that when the trade deadline rolls around, that's the one move they make. I could see them doing it. Acquiring relief help is a thing that's easier to do than anything else. Every team's looking for relief help, but there are a ton of relievers that are usually available before the deadline rolls around. But I'm not concerned about that. It's everything else. And we've touched on all of those things already. It is the rotation. It is the offense that are needs that are going to have to be addressed. But I am more than comfortable with the way the Cardinals' bullpen is shaping up right now and has for most of the year. You're going to have some injuries as the year goes on, and hopefully they'll be relatively healthy here in the next couple of months. But I'm perfectly comfortable with whatever they do. Part of the thing is you don't really know who's going to give you what. Sometimes a reliever like Shreve could come up and just start mowing people down. That happens all the time with relievers that get called up at the remainder of the year.
I was going to say to you guys, maybe the Cardinals can play Kisner against left-handed pitching and then keep Wieters in there against right-handers. Then you look at Kisner's minor league splits. He's only hitting 161 with a 588 OPS against lefties. Against right-handers, he's hitting 298 with an 816 OPS.
Baseball don't make sense sometimes, huh? Sometimes you just see something well. I'll tell you what, Wieters has thoroughly impressed me with what he's been able to do. With the bat, behind the plate, he looks good. Hell, I mean, he saved the game the other day with a slider that was way overcooked, way in the dirt. Bases juiced, I think it was, or at least a runner at third. And he ends up coming up with a great pick. He's done a great job. Certainly you want Yachty back as quick as possible, and you do want to be able to find spots for Kisner here and there. But I think Matt Wieters has done a great job, and it'll be another chance for Andrew Kisner to get another taste of the big leagues and hopefully grow while he's here.
You were mentioning those splits for Wieters so far this year, a 764 OPS against righties and against lefties, 553.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
I'm not expecting a ton of offense from the catching position. I mean, how many teams really get that? I know that in this case it helped a lot because they're already struggling as a team offensively. But
I was just thinking of a time to play him.
Right, I'm with you, BT.
I think that Wieters gets the overwhelming majority of the time.
Yeah, and maybe there's a guy too, and maybe it's like a Dakota Hudson or something where Kisner knows him really well, and they end up going that route. But either way, it's an opportunity. But to your point, Ronj, look, the Cardinals need you don't want to have Matt Wieters hit a home run late in a ball game to save your tail. I hope that's not the story of the second half is unexpected heroes. Now, I'm fine with that if that's a sidebar, if that's just a like, oh, and then you remember when Tommy Edman tore it up. But I'd also like to hear, oh, man, finally, that thing that we knew that Paul Goldschmidt was going to do, he's doing those things. You know, that rotation that the Cardinals thought that they were supposed to have that was going to be a strength and all the depth? Bam, second half, they're running. That's how this team wins. That's how this team gets to the playoffs, and that's how they win a championship.
And any team, your center fielder, regardless of what your team is, he has to be above the Mendoza line. Bader has to be better offensively, or whomever is in center field has to be better than Bader has been offensively.
Yeah, honestly, even if It's more glaring currently because everyone else is struggling and you need to be able to get something. But honestly, even if everybody was doing what they're supposed to be doing, there still needs to be more out of that position. It has to happen. So I hope it does happen for Harrison Bader because I love watching him play. I love seeing him go after the ball in the outfield. When he does get on base, you know that he's a threat every time. You know that he's first to third. You know he's scoring on base hits. Like he's that kind of guy.
And he's swell guy.
Yeah, and he is a swell guy. But right now, Major League Baseball is not the Atlantic League, and Major League Baseball is not tinkering with you can actually steal first. And by the way, if you haven't heard this, this is a real thing in the Atlantic League now, independent ball in the second half, where you can steal first any dropped strike or any dropped pitch, a ball to the backstop. You could just take off if you want to as a hitter now.
It's great.
But you can't do that in the big leagues.
I got to tell you, I'm
right
interested.
I kind of want to see it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought I would totally hate it out of hand, but I don't think it's going to affect that much.
No,
quite honestly, I think a lot of guys.
First, though.
Well, I think a lot of guys would be really afraid to try it.
No, what it's going to do is actually create a lot more offense because pitchers are going to be scared to throw that two strike hammer in the dirt,
right?
Or even earlier in the count, it's like, oh, I'll just bury one here, see if he can go chase it. Not anymore because mm-hmm. you don't trust your catcher back there, and all of a sudden you got a runner on first on a 1-0 slider.
I want to see how it works.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Coming up, we're headed down the stretch of this edition of the Fast Lane with a game of Would You Rather. Get your Would You Rather texts in now to the Hot Shots text line at 65780 because Would You Rather is coming your way on 101 ESPN. Time for a game of Would You Rather. Big Sizz is taking your texts at the Hot Shots text line, 65780. What do you got?
Would you guys rather wrestle an alligator or a python?
Python.
A python. All you can do is make sure you've got control of its head.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that matters, even if you have control of the python's head.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you can.
I think he can still wrap you up pretty good. I mean,
he can, but I think you could peel him off.
You think so?
If you've got control of the head.
Either way.
The alligator's going to...
Alligator
going to mess you up.
Look what it did to Chubbs. Damn alligator.
Oh, man. Put his hand off.
How, you know what? Talk about upset deaths.
Huh.
How about the fact Steve Irwin didn't die from a croc?
That's amazing. Did you guys see there was one in South St. Louis, a gator? Was it on a street?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
On a street?
Where, yeah,
just hanging out?
Yeah.
Was it down in the sewers hanging out with the Ninja Turtles and it just popped out?
Well, now let me get the. It just happened yesterday.
By the way. And same day, there's one in a pond in a Chicago neighborhood.
That's amazing.
Just swimming around and they're trying to find it.
Yeah. So Melinda Thomas and her husband came face to face with the gator last week outside of their Dutchtown home in South St. Louis. It was just in their front yard. And it was spotted by a neighbor about 7 p.m. Wednesday. They shouted, "Oh my God, it's a gator!"
Yeah, you know what it is.
And then they went to the sidewalk, and it was just a 3-foot baby gator.
Yeah, it's some jerk that got a pet alligator that he shouldn't have, and then it got too big for him, so he just cut it loose.
I'll just put this out here, and nothing bad's going to happen.
Yep.
But animal control came and captured it.
Oh, they got it?
Yeah.
That's good.
Would you rather have lunch with your future self or your past self? Say about 10 years.
So could I teach my past self something about what's going to happen in the future?
And then it affect your life now?
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, what other reason would you go back to the past?
But either way, even if you did it the other way, your future self could tell you what to do in the meantime.
Right.
So you're also, you're cashing in. So if you're looking to cash in on like an Amazon or something, Randy, chances are you'd still be able to do that with your future one on the next big thing.
Yeah, but I'm talking just more about general life stuff. Let's see, 10 years. Well, 10 years isn't going to make much difference for me either way, I guess. I want to see what retirement's going to look like, I guess.
Randy doesn't want an Amazon. He's already married.
Would you rather die from suffocation in a room full of farts until the air is gone, or drown in a pool of vomit?
Oh, that's a good one.
I'll take the farts.
Are they my farts?
I think it's just going to be rando farts.
Okay.
Rando farts.
Like maybe you're like a hospital waiting room or something.
I think that's also going to result in a pool full of vomit. I'm going to go with the farts, though.
Me too, yeah. Pool of vomit with the textures, and it'd be gross.
You can just hang out with Alan Nero.
Wait, right.
What was that?
Would you rather have a pet armadillo or a pet possum?
A possum's going to get hit anyway. Suppose the armadillo probably will. I'd rather go with the armadillo, though, I think.
I think the armadillos are kind of adorable.
Yeah.
I want an armadillo. They just roll, and they're just like, what's up? Yeah.
Possums just want to go sleep in the street.
Yeah, they're both taking naps in the street, which is weird.
Yeah, it is. Kind of an interesting thing that both have in common.
I don't know why they do it. It's not a good place to take a nap.
It seems dangerous to me.
It's extremely dangerous.
Yeah, I've never taken a nap in the street before.
No.
I see animals do it all the time.
Yeah, so I have a little one-lane highway to my house, and there's always animals sleeping out there as if it were a safe place.
It's unbelievable.
It's not.
And when they do it, like, they're half flat.
That's just because of the breathing. The breathing is different.
Oh, I see.
For animals.
Shallow breathing.
Yeah. It's really weird.
Would you rather get drunk and get caught making love to your car or get into a heated argument that went viral with an elderly group at Bob Evans?
I'll take Bob Evans.
I'm going with Bob Evans, too. Who knows?
Great.
I mean, just because the group is elderly does not mean they're faultless.
You are not my father or my boss.
Oh, my boss. Are you saying a 5 foot I should die? Yeah. Yeah, I don't need the banana in the tailpipe.
Kind of similar to what we had earlier, but a little different. Would you rather go back and relive your 20s knowing what you know now or relive your childhood without the pre-knowledge?
No, I'll take the 20s.
Totally the 20s.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't buy more years back, just in general?
I don't want to go through childhood again.
Yeah, but you don't have any knowledge again, huh? That would be nice if you did. Yeah, I'll do the 20s again also. They worked out really well for me.
A whole decade of knowing. Man, that would just be...
I wonder if you could learn, how to avoid having to have Tommy John surgery.
Oh. I was just thinking about home runs in general. I was going to go back and look at pitch sequences.
Well, yeah, that'd be interesting, too.
I don't think Tommy John was going to be avoidable for me.
Okay.
I think that was just going to happen.
Would you rather be locked in a room with a suspicious man who has a gun or a curious chimpanzee with a live grenade?
I'm going to go with the man with the gun. I can at least talk about that. A curious chimpanzee is surely going to pull the pin on
it. I would just
call
911 if the chimpanzee was in the room with me, though.
Am I going to give it Xanax?
Don't give it Xanax.
You could slip it.
No, seriously.
Yeah, I don't want
the chimp ripped her friend's face off.
Have you seen it?
Did it have like smelling salts or something?
Literally off.
Off.
Yeah, Xanax.
Oh, same thing. Yeah.
He took her face off. Off.
Nicolas Cage.
And finally, for the 2000s, would you rather be a cast member in the show The Office or in Breaking Bad?
The Office.
Yeah, The Office.
Although,
have more seasons. Didn't it? That means more residual money, I think.
And I probably didn't get shot.
I'm going with that.
Yeah. Although, you have to deal with the Pam and Jim thing.
It's just a cast member. You aren't a real character.
Oh, okay.
You're
I think
just
I can help
member.
Out
okay,
with the whole cool. Pam situation.
Gotcha.
That's true. Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
It's our producer, Brad Barnes. BT.
Oh, the guys are going to miss me tomorrow, aren't they, Shilty? Okay.
Yeah, pregame or the game?
The game.
All right, we'll be tuned in.
It's gonna be great.
Hey, you guys need to be nicer to the short people.
Thanks to Mike Ryder, our board operator. And Big Sis won't be with us tomorrow either. Scotty Doesn't Know is going to be with us maybe for the last time. For all of us, we thank you for tuning in, texting in, and being a part of the show. And until tomorrow at 3, good night, St. Louis.